Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
This is Kristen Johnston-Largent here with our Seminary Explores podcast. And today I'm really happy to have with me as a guest the Reverend Dr. Marty Zimmern. Marty is new to our community for about a year with his wife, Angela, who is serving in development and also doing some teaching here at the seminary. But Marty actually has his own very interesting background. And Marty, great to have you with us. Marty is a... has his PhD in American Culture Studies with an emphasis on ethnic and gender studies, and is also a parish pastor serving Trinity Mechanicsburg. And so, Marty, I thought, given all of the things that are in the news today, the past couple months, about race issues, race matters, and trying to think about how we can talk about this, raise the question, have conversations in the church in a way that's constructive, because I think this is really hard for the church to do. And as I think about you and your own biography, you're somebody who kind of embodies kind of different aspects of this conversation. So I wanted to start by maybe asking you to talk a little bit about what got you interested in culture studies, ethnic and gender studies, and how you saw that relating to your ministry.
Sure, thanks. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
It's good to be in a podcast with you. And my, you know, journey to working on a PhD was neither, you know, planned nor, you know, it wasn't like I had some brilliant strategy. But I, at the end of 10 years in my first call, I kind of felt like continuing ed was doing some good things in my life, but I wanted to delve a little deeper. And I found that this American Culture Studies program at Bowling Green State University back in Ohio was offering me the chance to kind of do some interdisciplinary thinking about the culture of religion in America, how it shapes our proclamation from the pulpit and also in our Bible studies and Sunday education and other adult ed venues. And what I discovered was... It's funny, having lived in two worlds now, the world of the church and the world of academia. In the world of academia, I'm considered very conservative, but in the world of the church, I'm kind of progressive. So it's interesting that those things are held in tension, you know. But one of the things I discovered, too, was that, sadly, the ELCA is one of the most segregated churches,
yeah, right,
like other mainline Protestant bodies. I was excited because I originally hailed from the Southeast Michigan Synod, which was touted as the most diverse synod in the ELCA.
Huh.
So I actually did some research to discover how diverse it was. And 3.5% of the membership of the Southeast Michigan Synod is, you know, people of color or ethnic,
wow,
minority. So
And that's the highest. That's our...
Well, yeah, and that was about 6 years ago.
Okay,
so
it could be
different. This may have changed.
Sure, sure.
But at the time, I was flabbergasted,
yeah,
you know,
right,
and shocked. So it's been a constant journey of discovery, both for myself and for my colleagues that I have conversations,
yeah,
with about the topic of race.
Would you say, I mean, just again, kind of stepping back, you were talking about kind of the role of religion in American culture, right? I mean, was there a specific period you were looking at, or are there some generalizations that you kind of would come away with when you think about that? Because I think, I mean, my experience has been that when we were talking before we started recording, you know, we were talking about how contextual all of this is, because
yeah,
it really,
yeah,
matters. You know, some places you go and it feels like the church really still plays a very important role in the public sphere and the public conversation, and being Christian still carries a lot of weight culturally, right? But then you can go to some other places where the church seems to be quite marginalized, and people who,
yeah,
are Christian feel,
mm-hmm,
like they have no voice. And so I don't know if there's even a way to you know, as you were doing your own studies, what you sort of found about the place of religion.
Right. Well, I do think, and of course we could spend all day deconstructing what the term religion means in the American cultural context.
Sure.
But I do think that historically there have been some very prophetic voices within American Christianity that have furthered the cause of social advocacy and for the socioethnic disenfranchised, not the least of which, you know, having just passed through Martin Luther King Jr. weekend, you know, the whole civil rights movement was basically grounded in a Christian church context. Now, the interesting thing to me is not necessarily who marched with Dr. King, but who did not, you know. And I think, I can't recall it off the top of my head, but one of the oft-spoken Luther King quotes was, you know, it's not by our it's by our inactivity that we are complicit in furthering the racism that is endemic to our society.
Right.
I think sometimes in this postmodern context, race is one of those issues that is so fraught with landmines in a congregational context that many pastors are afraid to even broach the topic, whether it's from the pulpit or from within an adult ed context. Because what you've got in any congregation, you have dozens of narratives from people's families and their personal histories that are inevitably tied up in race one way or another, how they think about race, how they view folks of color, and their life experience all shapes their opinions that they might not even be aware that they possess.
Right.
Okay. So to begin that conversation inevitably sometimes may trigger some very personal and emotional responses from congregants. And it takes a very grounded and differentiated pastor to begin that journey with a congregation, because here there be dragons, you know. You might uncover some things about your congregation that you didn't want to know. I can tell you a personal story about my first call. I was in Southeast Michigan for 10 years, and one of the beloved saints in my congregation, you know, he was in his 80s, I used to visit with him quite often, and he would tell me a lot about the history of the church, and he used to describe, you know, there is an unfortunate negative epithet that is used to describe the balcony in many older churches regarding, you know, that's the place where African Americans traditionally sat. And he sat there and told me that that was, you know, he used the N-word, and he said that's the N-word, heaven. And for him, you know, and of course there's this gut reaction in you as pastor, as person, you just want to jump all over the guy and read him the riot act. But then I had to step back and think about his narrative and his understanding of race and culture and his ignorance in stating that as a matter of fact, as if this is an inoffensive thing I'm making, you know. And it was like straight out of the pages of To Kill a Mockingbird or something.
Yeah.
So that was a real eye-opening moment for me, because I had always put him in this place of being such a progressive thinker and this really theologically astute person. But here was this aspect of him that I had never discovered before.
Right.
And I think there are dozens of examples just like this one in our congregations across the nation. So.
Well, you know, for me, I mean, so I'm teaching the intro course this spring, which I just, to systematic theology, which I love to teach. And so last Friday, we were talking about just an introduction to liberation theologies in general, right? Which is, it was just a really rich conversation. Of course, the students were really struggling because, you know, they're reading about the theology of James Cone and Ruther and Gutierrez, and they're feeling very convicted, many of them, you know. And I think, but for me, why I think it's important, and I don't know if this is even like a pre-step, you know, I mean, you know, again, what this has to do with the gospel. You know, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who still sit in the churches, our churches, and they don't, when they think about what it means to proclaim the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they think about hearing that Jesus loves them, hearing that they're forgiven, and of course, all that is of critical importance. But then somehow there's this idea that that is all disconnected then from our activity in the world and our relationship with other people. So like we have this vertical relationship with God that doesn't mm-hmm. somehow mm-hmm. impact, and people think about that. And of course, Lutherans, right, we're very good at law gospel, and so... Right, which I'm really, I don't want anybody proclaiming from the pulpit, like, to be a good Christian, you have to do X, Y, and Z, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But I also think that there's a disconnect. So when people hear pastors try to start having these conversations, it's like, well, mm-hmm. why are you bringing these, this is a political issue, or this is a, right? And so I think mm-hmm. there, for me, there's even a step that has to happen before we start addressing any particular, I don't know. What.
Well, yeah, and this is where, you know, the conversation has to be so delicate because folks take this stuff so personally because
right.
you're messing with their core identity, their core
absolutely.
Convictions
yep.
as human beings.
Yep.
Well, you know, my ancestors never owned slaves. You hear that a lot. So why should we feel right. guilty about, well, the collective narrative of our nation's history is bound up in the fact that slavery was the, you know, foundation of our economic empire,
right?
And not to mention the lands that we repossessed or possessed from
Native
Americans. So we have the land and the labor that built the U.S. economy. And, you know, there have been times in adult ed context where I've been able to get folks to the point where they realize that the money in their wallet, if you follow, you know, the trail, mm-hmm. eventually it goes back to labor that was, you know, wrongly taken on land that was wrongly taken. And if we can bring people to that kind of a eureka moment, and it's a long, painful journey, you know, and it's not always, it is going to be fraught with folks dropping off and saying, I just can't talk about this. It can cause some real metanoia for folks and some really neat, you know, not baby steps, but small steps toward a critical awareness of the environment in which we live.
Right.
You know, where most of us are unaware that the person of color who's cleaning our hotel room, you know, what do we think about them beyond the fact that, oh, it's nice that our bed was made? Well, they have a narrative too. Yeah. And Jesus loves them as much as we who are, you know, church-going Lutherans. And therefore, they are our neighbor.
Yeah.
And we should be convicted or compelled to regard them not as other, but as sister or brother in Christ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I just, you know, I for me, this also relates to why so many people, especially younger people, are not interested in the church. I think mm-hmm. because they feel mm-hmm. like it's just irrelevant. You know, for me, one of the many hills I will die on is the hill that the gospel really does matter, right? I mean, it really mm-hmm. does make mm-hmm. a difference, to not just for what we hear and do on Sunday morning, but for our whole lives. And it's a, and I think, you know, you were talking about the kind of conversion and the sense of when we do have a sense of genuinely being freed, not just from our sin, but for these lives mm-hmm. of real compassion and transformation. It's a really amazing thing, you know, and to be able to live out of that is such a great gift. You know, you're able to embrace the risk and speak prophetically and with boldness, I think, and a lack of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So it all relates very deeply to our faith. And so, you know, again, for people who would say, well, these are social issues, these are political issues, these aren't theological issues, or this isn't what it means to be church. I mean, I think it really does get at the heart of how we see ourselves as congregations and as a larger church in this country.
I would also add, too, that for any intrepid pastor who wants to try to begin a conversation about race in the context of their congregations, the first thing they have to establish, the foundation of this conversation that has to be established, and it doesn't happen overnight, it happens with years of sharing the journey in that congregational context, is that the pastor has genuine compassion and empathy for the congregant.
Yeah.
Right? We're
That's
not
right.
here to browbeat you. We're not here to teach you what you need to know. You haven't been doing it wrong all these years,
yeah.
which is sometimes
That's
the gut reaction
point.
Of people.
Yep.
You have to establish a basis of interdependence and reciprocity, emotional reciprocity with your congregation. And that involves also some very dangerous emotional transparency, where you admit your own shortcomings and failings as a person and pastor. And then I think you can begin to have that honest conversation about difficult things like race or sexism or even Islamophobia or interfaith issues. These kind of things can only be handled with in the context that is surrounded by mutual love and regard for each other.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be, you know, and one of the things I remember when I graduated from seminary, I was loaded for bear. I was, you know, I wanted to go out into the world and just proclaim the gospel
yeah.
and change everybody's attitude.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, I got a double dose of that when I came out of graduate school with my PhD, and I wanted to, like, you know, just reveal the inherent racism in the system and, you know, burn it all down and
yeah.
start over. That wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
What I did discover was, if I could love people where they were and how they were, then it was possible, and this sounds patronizing, and I don't mean it to sound that way, but being able to understand their context was what enabled me to gain their trust and also to start that conversation with hopefully some results and changes. And, you know, I don't want to cite examples, but there have been a few cases in my ministry and my wife Angela's ministry where we've seen how people have come to those moments, and it's so beautiful and humbling to be present when those things happen. It makes all the other, you know, committee meetings worthwhile,
yeah, right.
so to speak.
Have you, I mean, do you think for yourself, again, in your own experience, it's been easier to start these conversations one-on-one, in adult forums, again, from the pulpit? I mean, where have you found kind of that, that's been most fruitful and most...
Well, yeah, it's the Lutheran answer is both and.
Good.
I think there are certain gospel texts that lend themselves to opportunities. Now you're going to ask me which ones.
No, and
but there are definitely, you know, pericope readings that are just begging for the topic.
Yeah.
Prodigal Son springs to mind
sure.
because there is this idea that the other is this person that is somehow less deserving of God's grace than we are by virtue of their socioethnic and socioeconomic context.
Mm-hmm.
We are very quick to judge folks.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I saw them using food stamps, but their cell phone's nicer than mine.
Yeah,
okay.
I hear that a lot, too.
There are some very big layers to that
right.
cake, I guess,
right,
need to be taken apart and examined before we make these snap judgments.
Yeah.
So and so there are pericope texts that lend themselves to that. And I think, yeah, most importantly, the one-on-one conversations is where the real transformation begins, because that's where you can be the most authentic person
right.
to other people. But that also takes time, and it takes a lot of spiritual and mental stamina.
Right.
Not a lot of pastors have that, because, as we all know, we're fabulously overworked and underpaid. So.
Yeah. But I do think, I mean, you know, you talked about the authenticity of the pastor, and I do think in some ways the pastor, him or herself, I mean, it has to matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right to invite people into your own wrestling, your own vulnerabilities, your own struggles, so that it's like you said, I mean, we're doing this as a community of love, and I want to be vulnerable and share with you, and then I hope that you can be vulnerable and share with me, and this is kind of what we're working on together.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I mean, for a lot of pastors, I just think, you know, who has the time, right? I mean, it's hard.
I can share with you very briefly one little homiletical tidbit that I used many years ago. And it was the text where Jesus talks about if a person asks you for the shirt, you give them the cloak also.
Yeah.
In the church where I grew up, we had a number of Vietnamese refugees coming into our community. And one Sunday, a bunch of the boat people attended church with us to show their gratitude and to tell a bit of their story. And I remember one, and I was like in the third grade or something, you know, really young kid, very xenophobic, like young kids are. And this kid, this Vietnamese boy, took my coat off the coat rack and put it on because it looked similar to his coat.
Oh.
Well, that totally freaked me out, right?
Right.
This foreigner touched my coat. What, you know, did he bring a disease? Or, you know, all these horrible things passed through my mind, which was not born out of prejudice or hatred, but just out of a fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And I was able to incorporate that into the lesson, into the sermon, without sounding like really proud of myself or having come to this, you know, metanoia moment or anything. But by sharing that vulnerability with folks, that even though it was my third grade self, it was still a real, you know, it obviously made enough of an impact on me that I remembered it all these years later.
Yeah, right.
It brought to life that particular gospel message in a way that was meaningful to the context where I was at.
Yeah.
Because that was on a Sunday, like, not too far after 9/11. So
okay.
There was a lot
how interesting. Right.
You know, there
was
a lot of how do we deal with this global situation that we're in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's just been we are to 20 minutes. I always am amazed how quickly the time goes. But I really have appreciated our conversation. Again, it's just great to talk with somebody who has some experience and background, and also is working through some of these issues. We try to talk about this with our students and empower them to be able to talk about it when they go out. And I think we want to do that for the church as a whole. But like you said, it's really hard.
And if I could just give a shout out to my current congregation, Trinity in Mechanicsburg, is such a lovely group of people, and I feel very grateful to be serving there.
Well,
folks, if you're listening, I'll see you Sunday.
Well, they're lucky to have you for a pastor, Marty. Yeah. Thanks for your time with us, and we'll look forward to hearing more from you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. A production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.